Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, the showdown finally happened. Governor Gavin Newsom of California versus Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida. It was testy. It was a little weird. There was a poop map. There was a lot to unpack. So Mike Murphy is here with us, one of our favorites, political strategists, breaking down what happened, what it means for the rest of the race. We also talked about a little George Santos stuff, too. A little later on, some pieces that were meaningful from this week. A conversation with Arnold Schwarzenegger and the families of Israeli hostages. We head out to the Reagan Library for an incredible conversation between a 95-year-old Holocaust survivor and a 26-year-old survivor of the Hamas attack. And later, we catch up with Magic Johnson, as he does a lot of good in Inglewood. But let's start with Mike and that debate after this conversation between Newsom and DeSantis with Sean Hannity. A lot of it has to do with the concept of freedom. So listen to them talking about freedom, and then you'll hear Mike breaking it all down.
It does have freedoms that some people don't, that other states don't. You have the freedom to defecate in public in California. You have the freedom to pitch a tent on Sunset Boulevard. You have the freedom to create a homeless encampment under a freeway and even light it on fire.
Well, I love the rant on freedom. I mean, here's a guy who's criminalizing teachers, criminalizing doctors, criminalizing librarians, and criminalizing women that seek their reproductive care. You're making it harder to vote. You're banning books. I mean, spare me this notion of freedom.
So this was billed as sort of this big red-blue debate between different states. Right. What was your big takeaway?
Well, I think P.T. Barnum would have loved this because the whole thing was kind of a scam. If you look back, some PR guys got a little too clever, I think, a year ago when DeSantis was the big Republican, look out, here comes DeSantis. And you got Gavin, who I think is thinking about what's next for him, thinking, all right, most California candidates for president, you know, down the road, be it Cranston or Jerry Brown, they get a little lost because they don't get all the D.C.-based media to pay them any attention. And that irritates them because California, I'm the biggest deal in town in the country. I'm almost president. So they thought, all right, we'll go out there and start attacking nut Republicans to build up the DeSantis image. What would be better than a debate with DeSantis? And DeSantis, who, really, I get to talk about poop in San Francisco on TV for free? It's my greatest dream come true, you know. So you had two guys talking to totally different audiences across each other. Now, the problem is, since this genius idea got started, two things have happened. DeSantis has collapsed. Even though he was way ahead in Republican polls, looking very strong at the beginning, he made the critical mistake that guys like DeSantis often make. He started campaigning. People met him. He talked a lot about poop, apparently. It's an obsession, you know.
Yeah.
So, cut two, he's not what he used to be. He's hanging on for bare oxygen, trying to get second in Iowa, only to bump Haley, who has the momentum. And you've got, in the Biden world, Biden is in more political trouble than a year ago. A lot of that based on his age, fair or unfair. So I'm sure at the White House they're saying, all right, here's Governor Suntan out there looking young and vigorous against a right-wing nut. Thanks, Gavin. Just what we need right about now. Now, Gavin's guys would say, no, he was brilliantly defending Gavin.
But defending Biden and Harris.
Excuse me. I'm sorry. Yeah. Yes, Biden and Harris. And then you had Hannity. I have seen professional wrestling refs far more on the level than that moderating job last night. So, you know, I think it was a sideshow. It was kind of ridiculous. Halfway through, I clicked over to Monarch Legacy of Godzilla and Monsters because I wanted to see more civility. And I think I did.
Well, I mean, it seemed like, you know, the framing of everything was California sucks, right. Florida is great, right? It was like the question for everything. Yeah. Look, Newsom was on the defensive almost the entire debate by the way it was all structured.
Well, yeah, yeah.
But he did get, if you think of it in terms of, I need moments that I can post on social media that my base will like and that I can fundraise off of and increase my name ID, Newsom got that and DeSantis got that.
It was the thing. They were talking to two different audiences.
So where does this leave Gavin Newsom?
Well, he's on deck along with a lot of other strong next-generation Democrats. My guess is he slipped a few notches down the Biden Christmas card invite list because I doubt they found it helpful, even though on one level he was trying to help the president who could use the help politically right now. It also, you got to be careful. And another thing that Gavin did was some ads in Texas. You know, they've been doing these kind of gimmicky things, which are probably helping him with Democratic primary voters and getting him better known. But the cynics of the D.C. press corps that he needs to look at him seriously sees gimmickry, which is not helpful. So if I were him, I'd declare victory on the gimmicks. I'd get back to policy, and I'd win some stuff in the rest of his term as governor that he might be able to run on later, and he would be formidable.
Is Ron DeSantis more likely or less likely to be president after this debate?
No impact, sideshow. Let's put it this way. I think Gavin had a good line when, you know, in the waning days of your campaign or whatever it was. The big question for DeSantis right now, Trump's the front runner by far in the primary. Haley's on fire, though. She, of the preseason candidates, she, best athlete, I think, at politics, is at the top. Mm-hmm. But if DeSantis can cling to second place in Iowa, that'll slow her momentum into New Hampshire, where she can beat Trump. So he's kind of a spoiler now more than a realistic candidate because he can't get arrested anywhere outside of Iowa.
So are you saying that Nikki Haley is the only person that could be the Republican nominee other than Donald Trump?
She is the one who has a shot to beat him in New Hampshire, beat him in South Carolina, and turn the race upside down. But she needs to beat DeSantis in Iowa, which she was doing and may still do. But the governor of Iowa came out for DeSantis, and the biggest Christian warlord came out for DeSantis in that caucus. That said, I think it's close, and I think Haley might do it in Iowa.
So, and Iowa often breaks late. So what about President Biden in all of this? Because he's got to run against, presumably, assuming he's the nominee, against Donald Trump or Nikki Haley or all of this. How is he faring right now?
He's in trouble. You know, a little rule of politics is when people, fair or unfair, because I can argue it's unfair, but when people blame him for what is perceived as a bad economy, my free political advice is don't staple your name on what they hate, Bidenomics. Mm-hmm. Why don't we do Biden anthrax? I mean, it's not not a good idea. And the campaign has been slow to get on the offense, and the age thing is a problem. They can't make it go away. Now, there are things they can do that they should be doing. He's got a great, young, dynamic cabinet. Surround him. They're thinking it'll make him look old. No, he's already old. People get that. Show the A-team as opposed to the clown show around Trump. You know, get on offense on Trump. And Biden hints at it, but more could come. Finally, I think Biden is enjoying the Nikki surge because Trump will go nuts if she comes close. He'll be exposed as having a big chunk of the Republican Party turning on him. On the other hand, if she wins the nomination, and I'm not even a huge Nikki fan, but compared to Trump, I'm all for her, she'll beat Biden like a slow government mule. So he's probably a little nervous about her, too. Tough time to be president of the United States. I feel a little bad for him.
Yeah. Meanwhile, this week, we are celebrating the lives of some iconic Americans who've lost. Stanford law grad Sandra Day O'Connor was the first woman on the United States Supreme Court and really beloved by her colleagues and, of course, by Ronald Reagan, who appointed her. Rosalynn Carter expanded the role of the First Lady in fighting for mental health and humanitarian causes for decades. Both of these women were lauded for their character, their integrity, kind of remind us of another era in politics when people got along better. And then, on a very different note, there's George Santos, who's not been accused of being a man of character by too many people. Yeah. Of course, he was expelled from Congress this week for, among other things, allegedly stealing money from his donors and paying for his OnlyFans membership with it. What would you say is the legacy of George Santos and how much he represents this moment in American politics?
On my way to that depressing topic of George Santos, I'll just also salute the great Charlie Munger, who passed, and Henry Kissinger, who I think was a great patriot. So there have only been six people thrown out of the House. I mean, it's not easy to do. You have to literally, like, show up during the Civil War in a Confederate uniform. I mean, it's hard. And this is the only guy, this Santos, who's been thrown out without a criminal trial and conviction. But he is so bad, and I salute the over 100 Republicans who voted to boot him. Tougher to do when you're in a House where you're hanging out of the majority by a handful of votes. Because the guy's a one-man crime spree. I mean, it's unbelievable. So I'm glad they booted him out. They should have. And I predict that Congress's loss will be Honest Charlie's used car lot in Long Island City's gain, where he'll change his name and be selling lemons to people within a week.
Or a reality show, because that seems
like what he is.
You can just imagine the confessionals that he would do looking at the camera.
Yeah.
So while we're talking legacies, it's been 20 years, if you can believe it, since Arnold Schwarzenegger's recall. He's up on our show after this.
Yeah.
But you were one of the campaign managers driving that thing 20 years ago. What was it like to work for Arnold Schwarzenegger? And what do you see as his legacy in all this?
Wow, that's a great question. You know, when I think about it, what I remember about Arnold is all the drinking. I mean, it was round the clock. He was
He's kidding.
Of course I'm kidding. Yeah. He's my pal. I just wanted to get a rise out of him.
Yeah.
It was great. It was fun. It was wild. He's very smart. He's in it for the right reasons in politics, which is a cherished quality. And he's a fun guy to be around. He's always positive. He also understands the absurdity of it all and has a sense of humor about it, but also understands the need for the purpose. So I'm a huge Schwarzenegger fan. Often you work for a candidate, you see their flaws, you see their strength. I came away from my wonderful experience with Arnold in the first term and doing the recall, thinking even more of him afterward than I began. So he's a patriot, a good guy.
All right, well, with Arnold up next, and in honor of that experience that you both went through, we have a musical throwback, the theme song of the recall.
I remember it.
Twisted Sisters, We're Not Gonna Take It Anymore.
Right, it caught on.
Our thanks to Mike Murphy. Next up, our conversation with Arnold Schwarzenegger this week at his office in Santa Monica about the Israeli hostages. He hosted this group that was really moving to listen to, and here's our report. Arnold Schwarzenegger receives a dog tag with "Bring Them Home" written on it, representing the Israeli hostage being held in Gaza after a terrorist attack on October 7th.
I am a big friend of the Jewish people in Israel.
Each and every second for us is torture, knowing they're still there.
He hears from 14-year-old Ella Shani, who witnessed the murder of her father. Her cousin, Amit, is among the hostages.
You can't say you stand with humanity if you stand with the killing of innocent civilians.
This is U.S.
Schwarzenegger gives these family members bronze eagles to represent freedom. This meeting appreciated by Bar Rudaev, whose father, Lior, is among the captives.
You are one of my father's favorite actors. I remember watching Terminator's movie with him.
Before Arnold Schwarzenegger was ever the Terminator and one of the biggest movie stars in the world, he was thinking deeply about the issue of anti-Semitism. Schwarzenegger's father was a Nazi officer in World War II. Last month, he told us the story of arriving in America to bodybuild and calling his father back in Austria.
All of these guys that are helping me in America realize my dreams are Jewish.
Schwarzenegger began supporting Rabbi Marvin Heyer in L.A.'s Museum of Tolerance 4 decades ago. They're back together again now.
And Rabbi Heyer says, jump. I say, how high?
Heyer and the Museum of Tolerance Jerusalem organizing this meeting at Schwarzenegger's office with support from the Hostages and Missing Families Forum.
Not since the Holocaust have we witnessed such inhumanity.
It's important for all of us to get together here.
Schwarzenegger's Institute at USC hosted a conference earlier this year called Terminating Hate. He's visited the Nazi death camp in Auschwitz in a show of solidarity.
I want to talk to you today about the rising hate and anti-Semitism.
And he's recorded messages that have reached billions online. Schwarzenegger telling me he's honored to use his platform for this.
See something like that, and they say, this is what hate creates, hate. And this is why we have to be very careful in this country not to be the breeding ground of this kind of hate.
Our thanks to Arnold Schwarzenegger. Now to another angle on this story and another remarkable meeting. This happened at the Reagan Library in Simi Valley. A Holocaust survivor and a survivor of the Hamas attack coming together. Listen to our report. Two generations, both nearly killed for being Jewish. 95-year-old Holocaust survivor David Lenga walking through the Auschwitz exhibit at the Reagan Library. And 26-year-old Ariel Eingal, who survived Hamas's massacre in Israel on October 7th.
To witness again a repeat of hatred.
This is not looks like history. This looks like right here and right now.
This display in Simi Valley tells the story of Adolf Hitler's death camp in Auschwitz, where 1.1 million women, men, and children were murdered. David, one of the lucky ones to survive the camp.
I was near death every moment of my being in the concentration camps.
David has spent 7 decades telling his story, hoping something similar would never happen again.
Even though neither one of us thought that history is going to repeat itself quite that way, it did.
On October 7th, David could not believe the images of Hamas attacking Israel. It reminded him of Germany's surprise attack on Poland, where he first saw mass murder at just 11 years old.
And a river of blood appeared in front of me.
David never thought he'd ever see anything like it again.
This is shocking. Even to me, it's shocking that this is actually happening.
Ariel, October 6th included a late night party on the beach.
And we had a great night, one of the best nights of our life.
In the morning, he could see Hamas's boats headed towards the sand. In this video he took, you can hear explosions and gunfire.
We were all running for our lives, and the sand was just dancing and moving all around from the bullets, and all I can think of is that the next bullet's gonna be to my head and I'm gonna die.
He eventually found shelter and waited for hours for safety, while some of his friends, including Moore, seen here, were killed not far away.
They killed her on the spot, and yeah, we only found her dead body 4 days later.
Both David and Ariel say facing death changed the way they see life.
I made a very smart decision, as young as I was, to leave my darkest time behind me.
I also made a decision between me and myself that I'm not going to be a victim.
I rose from the ashes, I rebuilt my life, and I have a beautiful family today.
I'm going to take this grief, these horrors that I went through, and I'm turning them right now into action.
In addition to observing the historical record here at the Reagan Library, Ariel also visited the USC Shoah Foundation to be a part of their historical record.
Steven Spielberg founded Shoah after making Schindler's List. The idea? To record the testimonies of Holocaust survivors. Now they document all genocides around the world, including Ariel's story.
It made me feel really powerful. Like, it made me feel like I'm taking a stand. I want to speak up and to tell my story for those who can't.
David wrote a book about his journey. Ariel has been meeting with some of the top officials in LA, both of them constantly sharing their stories with groups.
Don't let the world forget. Don't let ourselves forget.
Don't be a bystander when you see evil raising its ugly head. Be an upstander and stand up for what you believe is right and fight evil.
They are incredible. What an amazing way to look at things, be an upstander. And by the way, if you want to check out that exhibit at the Reagan Library, head to ReaganFoundation.org to get your tickets. It's the most popular exhibit they've ever had there, and it's really worth checking out. Finally, let's end on an up note after some depressing stories we just presented. We met up with one of my all-time favorites, Magic Johnson, in Inglewood, as he did a lot of good. Magic Johnson delivering holiday hope to over 800 families in Inglewood.
I love giving back, love putting a smile on people's faces.
Happy holidays. God bless you.
The Lakers legend and an army of volunteers. Handing out food, self-care products, and toys.
It's been important for me to give back, touch other people, because somebody helped me to become Magic Johnson. Mm-hmm. I didn't do this by myself.
Saya Martinez couldn't be more grateful to receive.
This year has been very hard for me and my family. I have 5 children, and we've been really struggling and just a lot of financial issues. So this is very meaningful to me.
Big smiles from her kids.
We have water.
As Magic's wife, Cookie, oversees their pickup.
How does this change the holiday season for you?
It gives us a chance to be able to, you know, eat a decent meal.
It's just overwhelming, and it's heartwarming.
Giving back has been a priority for Magic and Cookie since they first met at Michigan State nearly 45 years ago.
There are organizations that helped us. So it's like, it's just embedded in us to give back. you know, and understand, because we know what it's like to be on the receiving end.
Magic's been doing this event here in LA for over a decade now and does similar events in their original home state of Michigan. Here's Magic's recent holiday hope in Lansing, Michigan, with everyone bundled up.
It was a lot colder.
Yeah, a little colder.
This is the first time they're doing the SoCal event at the Faithful Central Church in Inglewood, where Dr. John Paul Foster is the pastor.
It's magical.
Magic, the point guard, was known for his dazzling assists.
God bless you. Happy Thanksgiving. Come on. Come on, too.
On this floor, he's still directing traffic.
Today, he's still assisting. He's not passing the ball for 2 or 3 points. He's passing hope from home to home.
What does gratitude mean to you?
Oh, well, it means everything.
We love him. He's always out here helping the community, and he goes all out.
I'm just blessed, man, and I want to bless other people as much as I can.
That story making me believe even more in magic. Thanks so much for listening to The Issue Is this week. Next week, President Biden is going to be in town doing some fundraising. It'll be interesting to see what comes of that, and we'll have a brand new episode of The Issue Is. In the meantime, I'm Alex Michelson. Have a great one. Like us, subscribe, tell people about us, check in on social media, and have a great week.